Well, it's my privilege to host the first of 2 days of great plenary sessions, and we've got a terrific panel to kick off things right away with four very sharp minds to dissect the economy. Now, I know in your programs we've said Leah Weckert, the CEO of Coles, was going to be with us today. Unfortunately, she's unwell. She does send her apologies, and we send our best to her for a speedy recovery. But will you please welcome back to the stage to dissect the state of the economy, ASIC Chair Joe Longo, and joining him, Dr. Raphael Arndt, CEO of the Future Fund, Jackie Virtue, Chief Operating Officer of Soul Patts, and David Gruen, the Australian statistician from the ABS. Please make them welcome. I think you're next to me, Joe, and we'll have Jackie next to you if that's possible. We get Raph there, that's great.
Yeah, why don't we put Jackie there?
Thank you.
Thanks, team. I'd like to start with you, Raph. The Future Fund put out some great returns last week and the last 12 months, and indeed the last 3 years, really good. Those returns have been powered by a view of the world you took about 5 years ago, very prescient. You predicted less globalised world, a more polarised world, a world more prone to government intervention, and a world that was going to be more inflationary. Now, I am tempted to ask you what it feels like to be right. It's not a feeling I have very often. But is that world likely to continue to be the state for the global economy and the Australian economy?
Thanks, James. I think in answer to the first part of the question, if we ever think we're going to be right, that's really scary because we'll be wrong for sure. So, you know, you do have to stay humble. I think that view really came from a lot of deep research, started by something that was mentioned already this morning, which is generational change and the lived experience of younger people right across the world. And when you think deeply about that and go and do some research, what you can see is these trends repeat. And the world has been in these sort of situations before. So it feels very uncomfortable for all of us today because so many things in our lives, from social norms to how economies work, policy decisions, economies, where returns come from, are changing. But actually the world goes through these changes quite regularly. Just the last one was probably before most of us were born, but luckily we have historians to help with that. So I think from our point of view, we all as humans have this cognitive dissonance where we think that the future will look like the past, but it doesn't necessarily. And I think from our point of view, what we've been trying to do is call out areas we think are risks, areas which might change and why. And we started, as you say, writing publicly about that because we thought it was such an important conversation, especially for our industry here in Australia. We'll talk about where Australia sits in the world. But one of the great things we have going for us is an amazing wealth creation system and investment industry that sits off the back of that. And that gives us a lot of tools, but we have to be responsible in how we position that and invest that into the world. So as we sit today, to come to the point of your question, these trends, I think, are just beginning. The root cause is the generational inequality and the fact that younger people who vote around the world are not happy with how economies are working for them, how their politicians are working. And I am an optimist. We have all the tools available to both show them, actually, that in not all cases is that view right. Actually, for a lot of people in the world, their lives are better. Their kids will have better lives, be healthier, be more affluent, be better educated, but they're not necessarily perceiving it that way because of the way the world works. But in other areas, we do need to look at how things are functioning, and increasingly we're seeing policymakers around the world start to act on those things. And again, that makes us feel uncomfortable, but in the long run, by and large, it's for the better. It's just about how you smooth through that transition. And so from our point of view as an investor looking right across the world, what we're trying to do is understand those stresses and strains, what the policy response might be, and to position accordingly.
Raph, often those stresses and strains come to a head. There's a moment where things break. Are you alive to that possibility that we might get some sort of moment like that?
Well, for sure we will. We get them periodically. We don't know what will cause it or when it will happen. I think, you know, sometimes people say to me, like, what's the difference between an investor and a professional investor? And I think the difference is a professional investor doesn't rely on luck. And so we know that will happen. The question is, how do you prepare for it? It's a bit like what Mike Burgess was just talking about. I think the word of 2026 is going to be resilience, right? We don't know what's going to happen, but how do you take all the necessary steps in whatever your business is to prepare for that, to make sure you survive it, potentially to take advantage of it?
David, lots of people like me in the media are very good at giving hot takes on what's happening without necessarily having the facts at their disposal and the data.
Surely not.
Hard to believe, I know. Hard to believe.
Make a note of that.
Stop that. But David, you do have the facts and the data. Tell us a little bit about what's actually going on in the Australian economy. How are we tracking?
Okay, happy to. I'll just sort of give a high-level overview, and much of this will be familiar to people. I guess let's start with economic growth, which is pretty slow, sub 2% over the last year of the data that's been released. Even weaker when you look at GDP per capita, almost no growth at all in GDP per capita recently. We've seen a gradual rise in unemployment from 3.5% 3 years ago to 4.5% now. Let me put a positive angle on that. The ABS has been publishing monthly unemployment data since 1978, and the periods since 2001 is the longest period in that history for which we've had unemployment as low as it is. So we had a brief period just before the GFC when unemployment fell below 4.5%, but we have not seen, this is the longest period of having unemployment at 4.5% or below in the history of the monthly employment data. So it's the labour market has actually done remarkably well in the, if you look over the past generation, and that's even more surprising, at least to me, because this has happened at a time when we've managed to get inflation down from high single digits, which it was in 2022, down to what it currently is, which is sort of just at the top of the Reserve Bank's 2-3% range, or it's sitting at 3.2 at the moment with the underlying measure at 3. So if you'd asked me in 2022, would Australia be able to get its inflation rate back down to around the RBA's target without a serious rise in unemployment, I would have said, well, that the history would say it doesn't happen. But it did. It did. And that's been, to my mind, that's been a surprising and very encouraging development. Productivity growth's been sluggish. That's a part of the story about why GDP per capita's been growing slowly. That's a worldwide phenomenon. And it's you need cognitive dissonance to believe, on the one hand, that we're seeing rapid technological progress, and on the other hand, that there doesn't appear to be any productivity growth. There's obviously a fair bit of technological change, but it's not clear to me that technological change, at least as we see it at the moment, is material on the aggregate scale, because if it was, you ought to be seeing faster productivity growth, and we're not just about anywhere. Some people point to the fact that productivity growth in the US has picked up, and that's certainly true, but it might surprise people to know that productivity growth in the US at the moment is at the same rate as it was for three decades in Australia, the 70s, 80s and 90s. We had productivity growth at the same rate that the US is currently experiencing. So it's nothing particularly spectacular. And so I won't talk about AI at the moment, but But we perhaps we'll get back to that. But it's not appearing in the aggregate statistics yet.
Thank you, David. Jackie, Soul Patts has got so much, so many interests across the economy. Huge portfolio of listed investments, big portfolio of private investments. I was looking this morning, of course, you own Brickworks now, Australia's largest brick maker, listed companies, private credit. Soul Patts even owns a swim school. So if there's a better person on the panel to give us an overview of how the economy is tracking, what are you seeing out there? And I guess where are the pockets of opportunity that Soul Patts sees?
Thanks so much, James. We at Soul Patts really think about our investment portfolio as a whole. We don't necessarily have certain allocations to various asset classes. And so the mantra that we have is that the best idea wins. And so to answer your question and see where those sort of those trends are going, if I look back at our portfolio, say 5 years ago, we had three concentrated investments in listed companies across Brickworks, TPG and New Hope, and really only a 10% allocation towards private markets. Right now, post the Brickworks merger, we're 50% in private markets. And so that gives you a bit of an idea if you really back the best idea that's going to create value for shareholders, then you deploy capital to those ideas. With a 50% part of the portfolio in private markets, that's really where we've been seeing the opportunities over the last few years and probably see them to continue that way.
And Jackie, are those bets much more spread than, your listed portfolio is basically building materials, telco, mining? I imagine the private interests are far more spread than that.
They are far more spread than that. On the private credit side, we're sector agnostic, and it's really just how can we make sure that we help companies deal with the situation that they have at hand and the solutions and the problems that they need to solve. On the private equity side of the equation, we're not the traditional private equity investors where you have a short-term horizon of sort of 5 years and then you need to get out. We're long-term, and New Hope and TPG are examples of that. The sectors that we see there are the swim schools, financial services, decarbonisation, electrification, and, of course, manufacturing now with Brickworks. The reason that we go after those thematics is because we believe that Australia has a competitive advantage in them. They're resilient, they're recession-proof, and they're areas that we know that we can really add value so that companies can grow and pursue their aspirations.
So you're in the recession-proof parts of the economy. What's your sense of how Australia's tracking?
Look, we think well, I think, in terms of where those opportunities are. There is a lot of opportunity out there. There's a lot of growth out there for these companies to really expand, not only domestically, but internationally as well.
Yeah. Joe, I think Mike's address really chimed into a lot of the themes you picked up in your welcome, of this sort of age of uncertainty that we're in, that it's, you know, it's a permanent state, get used to it almost. Within that, though, are there risks that you're seeing or particularly being vigilant about at the moment?
Thanks, James. Before I answer that question, I just want to thank Jackie for joining this panel at such short notice. I really appreciate it on behalf of everyone at ASIC. As Raf said, a lot of these issues aren't new. Any business at any time has to deal with uncertainty. I think what's different this time around is that there's just such a wide range of potential challenges. I mean, it can feel very overwhelming, is a word I like to use, when you think about technology, innovation, cybersecurity, geopolitical harms. There's a whole range of stuff happening. And so if you're running a business or indeed running a regulator, you have to ask yourself, well, how do I navigate this? So from ASIC's perspective, we try to engage very carefully with the broadest range of the market and the community we can to get a really good feel for what the key problems or issues are.